I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. It's always a joy when I know what day it is right out of the chute. I've accomplished something already. It's not even 6 a.m. yet. Yes, it is. It's 6 a.m. now. Good to be with all of you. On a Wednesday, Payne and Pendergast. I am Sean Pendergast, and I am virtually alongside Seth Payne. Seth, there's still people that think we are literally alongside each other from time to time. When one of us coughs or something, they wish us the best in terms of staying away from the other person. But how are you doing today, my friend? How are things?
I'm doing well. You know, actually, I don't think we need to even mention anymore that we're not in the same room, because I found myself, when I listen to other people who are operating the same way we do, I kind of have to remind myself that they're not in the same room, because the technology has just gotten so much better. You can't tell anymore, especially when we first started doing this, we weren't using video and it sounded a little clunky. Now that we use video, we can kind of, know when the other one's going to wrap it up and we kind of have a better flow.
I may never have to see you in person ever again. The last time we saw each other in person, as we were going through the calendar yesterday, I believe was March 19th. So that may be it. As far as you, we may do a show together forever, but I may never see you in person ever again. Yeah.
Think about how much this is going to do for, reducing sexual harassment in the workplace and whatnot. I'll never inappropriately hug you or Landry or Ellie again. It's just, it's all video from this point. Now, images are another concern, but at the very least, it won't involve actual physical touching.
That's right. So as we continue to move along in this crazy world that we're in, I feel like we're doing a pretty good job of kicking things off and sticking around to the positive margins of this coronavirus thing, Seth. We talked a ton about baseball's plan yesterday, and we'll talk more about it today. Baseball's reported plan from Jeff Passan to try to get the sport restarted again. We did not touch on the NBA at all. And Adam Silver is also doing similar things, trying to get the NBA back up and running. And I would say the urgency of the two sports, the one that probably has more urgency, just from a sporting standpoint, the medical part I'll leave to the experts, but just from merely, we got to get this thing going again, is clearly basketball, because they had the coronavirus dropped right into the middle of their season. At this point, it sounds very, very, it sounds like a long shot that they're going to be playing regular season basketball again. To me, it sounds like the NBA is trying to formulate some sort of plan to have an NBA champion in 2020.
Yeah. And so whether it's a tournament or a truncated playoffs or a modified playoffs or something, that makes sense at this point. And you see various people weighing in, various commissioners of leagues or conferences, and man, everybody's just all over the place. You know, Mike Gundy's ready to go tomorrow, it sounds like, because he says he's got his healthy young men can handle it. They've got immune systems, apparently.
Right.
So that's what Gundy is saying. And then you've got other people urging great caution. I think the testing is the huge thing, and that's where the more available tests become and the more aggressively you can test people and kind of selectively quarantine them, that's where it makes sense that not just in sports, but the rest of society, we can return to work. Let me ask you this, Sean. Okay. Have you found yourself kind of just really, really hoping that you've had it already. Because they've got this antibody test now that Cuomo talked about yesterday. And as that becomes available, we'll start being able to test people and see, oh, you already had it. You're theoretically relatively safe. According to every other virus that we've ever known, once you develop an immunity to it, once you've had it. So, I think most people out there right now are thinking back to like, oh, yeah, I had a little bit of a cold 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
Cross your fingers. Hopefully that was the Rona.
Right, right. I felt a little warm for 2 days in a row. Like, not, I didn't feel sick, but you know, you always get that feeling, Seth. At least I do. I get sick very rarely. Like, I guess I've got a pretty good immune system. I don't get sick very often, knock on wood. But I can always tell when I'm about to get sick. I can start to sort of feel, you know, the heat behind my eyes and things like that. I didn't have hardcore feelings like that, but there was a day or two where I felt like, maybe I'm at about 99.2 instead of 98.6, you know, that kind of thing. Do I hope I've had it already? Of course. That means that means I'll have been through it and I've got the antibodies and everything else.
And that means, hey, you'd probably be allowed to go back to work and be around other people. You can go visit your grandparents. Like, I'd love to have the antibodies so my grandmother could get a visitor at her nursing home. You know what I mean? Like, she's so far, she's basically had conversations with some of my relatives from her second story living room at her assisted living facility, you know, and then otherwise it's like she's a prisoner. She's kept in her room all day. She's allowed to go out and walk the yard a couple times a day and get her steps in. I feel my grandma's probably getting a prison body. She's probably doing like push-ups and pull-ups. She's got a tattoo.
Are you about to say, are you able to see if she's gotten any ink yet? That'll be the clear indicator.
She's got love on one set of knuckles and COVID on the other.
And an eagle across her back, across her shoulder blades.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot that we still got to learn about this thing. And that's the dicey thing about bringing sports back, is that there's always this feeling, Seth, that we are the playground of life and that the importance of sports maybe gets overestimated sometimes. I do think that sports, though, can be sort of a barometer for other businesses. And we know that sports, just at its core, forget that the actual product is fun and games. It's a big part of the financial engine that makes everything go, and anything that gets the economy jump-started again, I'm in favor of, as long as it's safe, obviously.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think like the industries, like our industry, we're able to keep going while also maintaining social distance. Like, our company's been pretty aggressive with it in a few markets, Houston especially. We were one of the first ones to go just remote with everybody, you know, our producers, our hosts, everybody. Like, our offices right now are basically barren, but we can conduct business without actually being around each other. And, you know, I think if any industry, as they can start to figure out a way to abide by the rules but still get back to work, that's what we got to start figuring out. I think that the biggest thing, as long as if we have the antibodies, and once you have the antibodies, you can go around and be active. Maybe what the NBA needs to do is take Rudy Gobert, Marcus Smart, some of these other guys that have tested positive already, have a little league with just the antibody crew. It's going to be like a caste system in our society for the next year, where there's the blessed few that have the antibodies, and then all the others that are either just trying not to get sick, waiting for a vaccine, or maybe going in to sneak a little breath of somebody that's infected to try to get it themselves. I do not advise doing that. I don't advise doing that. Everybody, just be very, very careful.
And just know that Seth is the Harris County Commissioner for the coronavirus. So if he's saying that, you need to heed his warnings.
That's why I approved the funds for the $50 million temporary hospital at NRG Park.
That was cool that you did that.
It's good that I did that. I would say this. If I were the Chronicle, I might not have chosen a picture of the Astrodome when I put this in the article.
Is that what they did?
I would imagine that if they do a temporary hospital at NRG, it's going to be in the convention center. I hope it's not in the Astrodome. Gosh. I mean, we don't need to be marching sick people into the Astrodome.
You're gonna have to dodge some feral cats, and hopefully you don't have a phobia of rats or any sort of vermin. But you're gonna get your treatment. You're gonna get treated by medical folks.
My plan as the Corona Commissioner was to infect a bunch of the nutria in the park there, or the feral cats, and then take the plasma from the feral cats and give it to the patients. That's shot down summarily by the rest of the committee.
Yeah, but
frankly,
you should be given...
they lack vision.
Yeah, I was going to say, you should be given credit for thinking outside the box. That's what I would do. Dana White bought a private island to conduct his fights for UFC. I texted my buddy. I have a buddy, Seth, who's one of the – he's like the VP of live events for Dana White. I went to high school with him. And I texted him last night. I'm like, are you going to be living on this island? He texted back, I don't know.
I know. It's kind of scary. You know, as much as there's positive innovation being sparked by this crisis, I'm a little bit nervous about Dana White having his own potential sovereign nation on an island somewhere where he can do whatever he wants. He can create the laws and the rules, choose who comes and, more critically, who leaves. I'm nervous about this with Dana White.
That's right. That's right. All right. We're off and running on a Wednesday. We appreciate you tuning in with us here, whether it's on radio.com or on the app or streaming on sportsradio610.com on Alexa. And those of you still making the trek into work, we always appreciate you listening terrestrially. Is there still a chance? Maybe there's a chance that the DeAndre Hopkins trade unravels. One of the head coaches involved in the trade talked about that. We'll hit it next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday morning. Good to be with all of you. So, Seth, this topic is one where I think Texan fans, every time I see it, I'm like, boy, Texan fans, it feels like Dumb and Dumber, where they're like, so you're saying there's a chance. the chance that the DeAndre Hopkins, David Johnson trade could somehow unravel if one or both, probably one, doesn't pass their physical. There are two human beings involved in the trade. A draft choice can't fail their physical. The second round pick will not fail its physical, at least until it becomes a human being. But DeAndre Hopkins and David Johnson potentially could. Now, DeAndre Hopkins is one of the most durable players in the league. He has suffered a bunch of injuries, but based on the footage that I saw yesterday that he was working out over at Patrick Fertitta's house, which we'll get to in just a second, I don't think it's going to be Hopkins that fails the physical. I don't think Johnson's going to either. Injuries weren't his issue the last couple of years. It was poor play. But just pretend for a second that one of them fails their physical. The report is, Seth, this thing's going to lock down before the draft. But, man, what if this thing drifted till after the draft? Teams have made picks. Teams have made picks and used the draft choices already.
Arizona decides to draft CeeDee Lamb. And because that was a lot of the questions about it and some of the theories popping up now are that, you know, Arizona is still going to draft CeeDee Lamb and they just want to have that, you know, be the they'll have three studs plus Larry Fitzgerald as his career winds down. But I don't think that's likely. I mean, the original story when all that came out was that the Cardinals were planning on drafting CeeDee Lamb unless they could get DeAndre Hopkins in a trade. They got DeAndre Hopkins in a ridiculous trade, and I don't think they'll do that. So I think the Cardinals definitely 100% want DeAndre Hopkins. I would hesitate if I were a Texans fan to actually hope that this trade falls through, because DeAndre Hopkins is still going to get traded. If O'Brien didn't like a disgruntled DeAndre Hopkins over contract issues, do you think he really wants a DeAndre Hopkins who's come back after you tried to trade him all away? This isn't like the champions. This isn't like the Matt Bullard trade. This is a pretty big deal. And so O'Brien would trade him, but at this point, every team in the league would know that the Texans were desperate to get rid of him, and it would end up being an even worse deal than the David Johnson trade.
I think the hope would be, Seth, if you're a Texan fan, because there is a template for this. The Dwayne Brown trade ultimately was not the deal that was agreed to at first, because if you remember, Jeremy Lane, the cornerback in that deal, failed his physical. So they had to redo the deal. Dwayne Brown still went to Seattle. They found some other solution. It was a fair trade for both sides. I think the biggest hope that fans could have, the biggest hope I have when I hear that there's a minuscule, tiny little sliver of percent chance that, hey, what if David Johnson fails his physical? Is that the Texans at least squeeze a better deal out of this thing, right? They at least, and if it happens after the draft, then obviously you got to look at things that would, you know, you're looking at 2021 at that point. Maybe you're looking at another player at that point. Again, we're talking about something that has a very small chance of happening, but something I think Texan fans would feel a little bit better about if you can squeeze the Cardinals for a little bit more. And let's face it, Seth, if you get into that situation where like, okay, we got to redo the deal. I mean, look. Theoretically, the Cardinals should be the one that feel a little bit over the barrel then, because they want this thing to stay in place, right? They want to keep DeAndre Hopkins. I'm skeptical about anything that the Texans are equipped to do from a general manager standpoint right now.
If David Johnson were to fail his physical, what I would expect is a renegotiation, like you said, and hopefully what would happen is something that's more realistic and what would have been expected, which would be, okay, let's break this thing into two trades. The DeAndre Hopkins for a second round pick, that was a bad trade, but that's what that trade is. Now, let's make the David Johnson aspect of the trade more fair and equitable, which would be like, all right, Arizona, you're going to pay at least half his salary, and you're going to give us a mid-round pick for David Johnson, especially since he's banged up here. Maybe they can grab a little bit of that. But this is honestly, this is the part where I don't quite trust Bill O'Brien, the general manager. This is where I think that his inexperience shows up. It's on these little tack-ons, these little renegotiations at the end of the deal. And that's like paying David Johnson's full salary, paying half of Jadeveon Clowney's salary, all these little things that I think a more savvy general manager can kind of work a guy over. I think Steve Keim's going to work Bill O'Brien over with that. The other thing I would worry about, Sean, is this. You don't want, if for some reason it's the Texans that decide to bail out of this deal for whatever reason, you don't want to start to get a reputation as a guy that is a pain in the ass to do business with, you know, kind of like the Orioles are in baseball where nobody trusts them to get a deal done. You don't want to be that guy unless you would prefer that Bill O'Brien, as a Texans fan, you don't want Bill O'Brien to be able to do business with anybody.
Well, Seth, I think it's going to take a few voided trades for teams to stop picking up the phone and calling the Texans to do deals right now. I'm guessing other general managers are not going to remove Bill O'Brien from their speed dial all of a sudden. If this trade gets sort of in a wonky way redone because of the Texan side of things, you know what I mean?
Right.
The store is still open. The Dollar General store is still open over at NRG Stadium.
How much? What do you think people are offering for J.J. Watt right now? He's an older guy. He's had multiple injury concerns over the last few years. And I bet offers have been floated in. Not that the Texans are inviting them or anything, but I wonder if anybody has just said, like, what would you think about this for J.J. Watt?
My first offer wouldn't be anything more than a second round pick, because DeAndre Hopkins was a more valuable commodity than J.J. Watt when he got traded for a second round pick. Why would I start my bidding at a second round pick?
I don't think a fair offer would be anything more than a second round pick, probably, for J.J. just because of his age and his injury history. The team that would be taking him on would be taking a pretty fair salary with a couple years of control left. So I think they'd get a lot out of him. I don't think anybody would trade. Would that be a fair price for JJ at this point in his career? Would a first round pick be fair? I guess it depends on who you are.
I think it depends on the team. And here's why, is because there are probably teams out there that feel like, you know what? We're one piece away. If we get JJ Watt and he's healthy for a season on our team, especially if you're a team that, if you feel that way, it means by definition, your first round pick is not the same as everybody else's first round pick. If you're a team that feels that way, that means you feel like if we trade for J.J. Watt, we're picking 32nd or 31st. That's different than a team who's in the top 10 trading for J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
I think the right team out there, I think there's a few teams out there that could look at trading a first round pick and go, man, if we get him, that puts us over the top, you know, especially, you know, Brady's over in Tampa Bay. The league's been kind of shuffled a little bit. Kansas City has all kinds of cap issues. So are they going to be able to keep everybody together? That kind of thing. I think there are teams out there that have probably, I don't know if they've offered it, but there's teams where it makes sense to offer a first round pick.
Yeah. I tried to search for the oldest player ever traded for a first round pick. And I'm trying to think. Drew Bledsoe wasn't close to 30 when he was traded to Buffalo, was he? He might have been.
He was drafted in 93. So let's assume he's 21 years old then.
Oh, yeah. And the trade was in 2003. Early. Yeah. So he was over 30. Now that's 30s, a quarterback, though. Yeah, it's a quarterback.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I think you're right. There are a lot of teams out there that would look at JJ as like, okay, that's the missing piece. And if we get him in here, then that's a Super Bowl this year. So they might, if they're all in on a Super Bowl, they might go for it.
Let's do this in the next segment. Let's get to Hopkins working out with former teammates yesterday. What exactly does that mean? And this baseball plan, we've got answers to some of the important questions about MLB's plan to start the season. Got a long segment coming up. We'll get into that with you next. Hey, Seth, real quick, before we get to this baseball stuff, did you see the tweet yesterday? It was actually on our Twitter page on Sports Radio 610. Sports Radio 610 on Twitter. DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller were on Instagram Live working out at Patrick Fertitta's house. Patrick Fertitta, of course, the son of Rockets owner and Landry's founder, Tillman Fertitta. Looks like he's got a nice basketball court in his backyard.
Yeah, frankly, a little disappointed. It looks like it's a hybrid tennis court / basketball court. Come on, Patrick. You need separate.
So you're mad at Patrick Fertitta that he doesn't have a compound where he's got multiple playing surfaces that he is. Times are tough right now, Seth. You got to conserve playing surfaces sometimes.
I want it to look like a junior college out in the back of Pat Fertitta's house. That makes me feel like that's a family that's going to spend into the luxury tax.
That's right.
It does look like a nice court though.
It does. It's pretty nice. So the pictures were of, it looks like Fuller and Hopkins doing some sort of drill with each other where they're sitting and they've got their legs kind of like, they're like a leg lift, but with a ball involved, tossing a ball back and forth.
It's one of the dreaded core exercises that I deplore because nobody had sports hernias until everybody started doing a half hour of core exercises a day.
Okay, so you've done this drill before.
Yeah.
They're doing.
It's an exercise more than a drill, but yeah.
Okay. Have you done it with somebody who's a wide receiver? Or do they group the defensive linemen together to do it with each other?
Yeah, you could do it with, I mean, that's just like something you might do after practice or before practice. You know, Andre Johnson used to do like team core workouts once a week before or after OTAs. He would do what they had done at Miami, like him and Frank Gore did. And it sucked. It really, really sucked. This is actually why I hate core exercises, because the stuff that Andre used to have us do, it was pretty intense. And Andre, I don't think Andre never had a core muscle issue. He had that hamstring issue. So,
yeah, the hammy.
I will say too, in this workout, it looks like they did a good job of at least in the pictures, looking like they were keeping social distance from each other.
They were. They're. I would say they're 6 feet apart for sure in this picture. And I think the story with the picture, the reason why it's up on our Twitter timeline at Sports Radio 610 on Twitter is, I think the two things here. One, Seth, you have two now former teammates working out with each other, Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins, and then the two of them, brought in Tywan Jones, Deshaun Watson, and Charles Omenihu on the chat feature on the Instagram Live. If Bill O'Brien ever were to meander over to Instagram and follow Hopkins or Fuller or whoever was conducting the Instagram Live, what do you think he's thinking watching Hopkins work out with his former number one receiver, now working out with his current number one receiver, and then bringing in the quarterback on a chat where everybody's all poops and giggles on there?
Oh, you know what I would love? Yeah, it's that if O'Brien was worried about DeAndre Hopkins being too much of a leader in the wrong direction, if those rumors were to be true, then he's still leading, and right. He's still hanging out. These guys are still friends. There's the coronavirus is providing an opportunity for DeAndre to stick around in Houston and continue to lead all your other guys for however long this ordeal lasts. Yeah. I would imagine he's probably like, oh, crap. You got to – as a coach, though, and this is the problem, and I don't know if O'Brien is good at this or not. I would imagine he is, because, like, most coaches have to get good at this. You got to learn to kind of just shut off, like, what – certainly outsiders are saying about you, but also the people you coach. If you're any kind of an effective coach, at certain times your players are going to bitch about you. That's just life, because you put a lot of pressure on them. They're going to bitch and chafe, but hopefully they're the right kind of guys that rally around and everything. So hopefully there might be that twinge of, crap, what's DeAndre saying to these guys? But then you turn it off really quickly, and you just got to ignore it.
Okay, so I just want to make clear what you just said. You think O'Brien might be good at this skill of being able to kind of assimilate and filter all of these things?
I hope so. I mean, it's almost, you can't. I know that O'Brien hears all the noise, and he hears criticism, and he hears what people say on sports radio, if only because some of his jackass friends are too dumb to not shut the hell up. And they go and they tell him every negative little thing that they hear, you know. So he does hear some of that. As far as from your own players, though, I mean, that's just kind of, it's like being a parent, you know? You know that there's going to be times where your kids hate you inside. You know, they don't hate you, but they feel like they hate you because you're disciplining them. So I think that I don't think you get to be a Bill O'Brien's age and remain in the profession if you're not able to at least turn some of that off.
Okay. This is where I remind you that he traded Jadeveon Clowney and DeAndre Hopkins. I'm just going to.
Okay. He might be awful at turning it off. He might be. I'd say he's probably gotten better at it along the way, but he's probably still awful at it in comparison to other players. Yeah.
There you go. So you and I spent a lot of time yesterday, Seth, as we shift gears here back to baseball, talking about Jeff Passan's article that Major League Baseball has discussed. They've discussed, as it turns out, several plans, which is not a surprise. But the plan that got the most traction yesterday, because Passan wrote about it in great detail, is one that where baseball, the powers that be, the union, federal health officials have even been involved in these discussions, have a plan with a very aggressive potential May start date, which I think in the last 24 hours, that's been the one big takeaway from all this, is people are like, they're crazy if they think it's going to happen in May. Even baseball has come out with a statement kind of distancing themselves a little bit from Passan's article, saying, hey, look, that's one thing. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the statement in front of me. But baseball was clearly pumping the brakes on this thing a little bit yesterday. And we got some answers, I think, Seth, to some of the key questions from Passan's article. But before we get into those, what did you think of the reaction? I mean, you and I were reacting to it fresh because the story came out overnight. We were the first, really, to be able to react to it. So once you get a day to digest something like this, you come away with some more takeaways. What's your, you know, here we are 24 hours later. What's your big takeaway on this plan 24 hours after we dissected it yesterday?
Well, because we were talking about it yesterday, like you said, it was fresh. And we were kind of rolling with the positives from it and the potential and the possibilities. And then Lopez came on for the toss at the end of the show and frankly took all the wind out of my sails. And I was demoralized and depressed for like 2 hours. I felt almost like he was calling us a little bit foolish for believing any part of this plan. I think the biggest issue, as you just said as well, is the timeline. I think there are a lot of things in this plan that make sense, but to get it done by May just seems like an impossibility. So that's where I am right now. It's like everything else, so much of this revolves around the testing. How quickly does it become available? When is the antibody testing available? And what's the plan for aggressively testing and then selectively quarantining various players if they get sick? I think that's all possible. It's just got to be on the right timeline. So where I am right now is that I think it's a good plan, but I think that they might have thrown May out there in internal meetings figuring, look, let's figure out what's the absolute fastest we could get this done, knowing they're going to have to push the deadline back. And to my knowledge, Major League Baseball didn't release this publicly, right? This was just Passan reporting on it from what he
sources,
heard.
Right?
Yeah. So I trust Passan that he got those details right. But I think in terms of the overall strategy of baseball, they probably said, all right, pie in the sky, let's get back by May. Let's figure out what we'd have to do to get that done, knowing that you're probably going to get pushed back. But look, hey, if all of a sudden three different manufacturers say they can start pumping out a million tests a week, then we might be able to aggressively test. If that doesn't happen, then we're going to push it back into June, July, whenever.
Well, let's face it, Seth, as we were breaking that down yesterday, May was the headline part of that whole thing. May was the part that got us going, whoa, okay. I mean, I'm going to click on the story either way because it represents a return to baseball. I'm really going to click on that story if it's saying we might have baseball in less than 4 weeks. Like May, this is just in, it's April 8th. You know, May is in 3 weeks and change coming up here. So that was the part where everybody was like kind of pumping the brakes. Now we got some answers to some things yesterday, and I want to go through these. we just touched on the fact that they're not nearly as far along as we'd probably hoped in terms of getting this thing rolled out. This was interesting. Some players are privately saying they would not participate in this. What did you think of that?
I think the 4.5 months spent away from family is obviously a big objection for a lot of guys. And I'd read a couple anonymous people talk about that. But I hate to invoke the, hey, military people do it all the time, because obviously that's an extreme job. But I wonder, as a player, strictly on a financial sense, if you trust the safety of the plan, if you're okay with that, to spend 4 months away from your family, but to make the boatload of money that you could potentially make Like, I get you're sacrificing a whole lot of money for 4 months away from your family, or for to spend 4 months with your family. And I also think that this plan is probably going to at some point include figuring out a way to have your family along with you if you want. You know, your family's going to have to be quarantined with you, but it's going to be like, it's going to be at a really nice hotel or resort in the Phoenix area. And I think they'll work around that.
Or at least having junctures during that 4.5 month period where they can fly their family in. You know, maybe not full time, but there's a weekend where they can bring them in. I can't imagine that the you're right. I can't imagine that ultimately the final plan involves being completely away from family for that entire time. Although I do, Seth, as you lay it out, you bring up the military, but I think of people too who are just away all the time on their jobs. This is going to be one of those things where there's going to be a disconnect, I think, between the average fan and the players, which is, hey man, the average person makes a ton of sacrifices family wise to be able to just put food on the table, let alone live in $5 million mansions in multiple cities and things like that. That this is going to be something, the whole away from the family thing, where there will be, if it becomes an issue, is going to be a massive disconnect between the players and the fans.
But there's also, I'm willing to say, all right, I know that a lot of people don't see it the same way I do, or that, you know, whatever their emphasis is on family and actual contact time with the family, I'm not going to judge anybody on it, but I guess a guy's just going to have to make that decision and say, well, all right, I'm not going to do this. The rest of the league is, and I'm not going to get paid this year, you know, because there is an avenue by which you can go play the games. You have to make a sacrifice, which is not see your family perhaps all that much for 4 months, but like, you're making that sacrifice. I don't think guys should be able to, I don't think guys should be able to get away with like having a bunch, like if 75% of the league makes a sacrifice and they get paid, the 25% who don't want to make the sacrifice shouldn't also get paid. That's where things might get dicey with the union there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, these were good data points in the article on ESPN yesterday answering these questions, Seth, because I didn't know the answers to this stuff. They have 10 spring training facilities in Arizona. Some of them are shared by multiple teams. 5 of those 10 are shared by multiple teams. So half the league, or half the game, half the sport already works out and does spring training in Arizona. So there's a familiarity for those teams. The Astros are obviously not one of those teams. They share a facility in West Palm Beach with the Washington Nationals. But there are those 10 spring training facilities. There's Chase Field, which is where the Diamondbacks play. There's Phoenix Memorial Stadium, which is where Arizona State plays. And then there's Grand Canyon University Ballpark, which is where Grand Canyon University plays their games. So there are 13 ready-made stadiums to go ahead and play Major League Baseball in if they go through with this plan. So there'll probably be a couple. I would imagine Chase Field being one of them where they play multiple games a day. You know, there's a day game and a night game, especially with a stadium with a roof. And that's something you're going to need to think about as the weather gets hotter. But that was my big question, Seth, is, boy, are they spreading this out over like 6 facilities or something? It's going to be really hard to squeeze in these games. It does feel like, just from a pure number of facilities standpoint, this is a workable plan. They've got the locations to execute this.
So they have the locations. I guess the transportation and trying to maintain a quarantine environment, it's one thing to do it in one centralized area, but then to extend that quarantine out to all those different facilities, that's again where the logistics of it are just kind of mind-boggling. And my little brain just can't even wrap my head around, how are you keeping that facility kind of pretty much sterile the entire time with the multiple different, the workers, the support staff, the stadium crew, all of that. It seems like a logistical nightmare, but if baseball is up for it, I mean, look, they obviously have the funds. And I wonder if they're looking at this season, because they'd be losing out on a whole lot of gate revenue as well. They might look at this season as either hopefully a break-even venture, if not a loss leader, in just keeping people engaged in the sport. You know, saying like, all right, we're going on, we're going to have to modify a whole bunch of stuff, but here we go. I also, you know what, Sean, this is going to, again, we're going to talk about antibodies probably every segment here. The guys that test positive for the antibodies that show they've had it already, those guys are going to be able to live wherever the hell they want, right?
Yeah.
Like they'll be able to come and go as they please. So you're going to have a caste system there. You're going to have the untouchables, who are the people who haven't had the virus yet versus the gilded cast of people that can come and go and do whatever the hell they want because they've had the virus.
What is our power ranking of Astro players that we hope have already had the coronavirus?
Well, let's see. Bregman hasn't been out and about as much because he got married, right? So he probably wasn't raging hardcore like he was before. Or is he just only engaged?
Maybe
they've still been partying a bunch. Who knows? Not that he was ever like a huge party animal or anything.
Right.
I feel like, I don't know. Who's the most like Yuli's? Yuli's just so friendly. I could see him shaking hands and kissing babies like a politician, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention, if he goes back to Cuba, he's a superstar in Cuba. So if he goes back to Cuba in the offseason, you know, they're basically like a royal family of baseball over there. I feel like he'd have a lot of contact with people.
I hope that Altuve has had it already and he's got the antibodies because it's been a rough several months for Jose Altuve. He's been dragged through the mud unnecessarily and unfairly. And I right now hope that Jose Altuve is just a walking jug of antibodies. I hope he's walking around and the virus is bouncing off of him, metaphorically speaking. Yeah,
it's going to become a blessing in our society of some sort of like, I wish you well in the future and I hope you had coronavirus in the past.
That's right.
Antibodies to you. Antibodies to you. Antibodies to you.
You're right.
Yeah. Instead of peace be with you.
Yes, I was just going to say.
Instead of peace be with you, it's antibodies to you.
Right. I wish you, the priest will be up there, I wish you antibodies. Now wish antibodies to those around you. Here's another thing that we learned in this article, Seth. And Seth and I are going through all the questions being answered yesterday from Major League Baseball's reported plan to start the season in May. The average temperature in Phoenix is 104 in June, 106 in July, 104 in August, and 100 degrees in September.
Well, here's the thing, Sean. It's a dry heat. So
that's what I'm told, yes.
So the great thing about a dry heat is that your shirt doesn't get wet as you die of dehydration. You just kind of, you know, everything evaporates. So you get dehydrated and collapse. But you're not sweaty. You're not a sweaty mess as you do it.
Yeah. They laid this out pretty good in the article, Seth, where, okay, that's an issue. These guys don't want to be playing games in the middle of the Arizona heat in the summertime. Obviously, it's going to be really hard to squeeze all the games in you want to if guys are getting worn down by the heat. There's a reason there's a roof on the stadium in Arizona, but these stadiums are all outdoors. This is just the fact of the matter, other than the Diamondback Stadium. So what they're saying is the start times might be an issue for East Coast teams because this is obviously being done, one, to get a season in, just I'm guessing for historical sake, but two, it's being done so that their TV partners have content. Well, they're going to televise these games at the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Phillies and the Nationals and all the teams that are in the Eastern time zone. They're going to be televising these games. Are they going to have to televise these games? Are Yankee fans, and not that I really give a crap about Yankee fans, but just logistically, it's an interesting thing. Are Yankee fans largely going to be watching Yankee games starting at like 9 o'clock Eastern time every night? Because they need to start at 6 or 7 o'clock Arizona time. Because
Chase Field is indoors. Does the article say how many of the other stadiums or ballparks are indoors?
I think zero.
Just Chase Field. So it's not like you can have all the it's not, plus it wouldn't be fair if all the East Coast teams got to play in comfortable temperatures all the time.
Right.
So the average low in August is 82 degrees. So that's obviously at night. And you're just waiting. Yeah, I think the East Coast is just going to have to gut it out. Sorry over there, but you're just going to have to stay up later to watch your baseball teams.
They're not going to want
their team to be playing in the dead of the 3 p.m. temperature just so they can watch it at home.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's the only alternative, I would suppose.
It's looking like the season is going to be around. You know, as you look at them, try to do the math in this article, Seth, if I had to guess, because I don't think May is going to be when it starts and they're going to need a couple weeks of spring training. Although there was a mention of, quote, rapid readiness for the players if they need to get started, boom, right away, which that's translation. That's code for we want to get our paychecks as soon as possible. And I don't care if I hit 152 for the first month of the season. I want to get paid. But it looks like the season ultimately will be around 110, 120 games if they're able to pull this off, which is the same amount of games they played in the strike season in 1981. 110. If you had told me last week, when before any sort of information came out, And when you could tell that this thing was starting to veer into an area where, like, wow, there's going to be a lot more stuff canceled than maybe we thought. If you told me 110 games last week, I would have said, yeah, that I'll take that. I mean, you and I were kicking around 60 games in some of the scenarios we were talking about.
Yeah, I just wonder, though, too, if it's 110 games, but it's compressed with no days off and with extra doubleheaders, I almost wonder if 110 is too aggressive, depending on when they actually get started. I still wouldn't expect it to be 110 games. I think if they play it at all this year, it's going to be closer to 80 or something.
Here's one thing they got to do. They can't get cute with this, is we don't need interleague play this year. You're going to have a truncated season either way. I don't need it so that the Astros are playing games out in Arizona against the Colorado Rockies. You know what I mean? Games that literally have no head-to-head effect on the standings that impact you from a divisional or a home field advantage standpoint. Do away with those. Only have games that have meaning in terms of the postseason. And interleague games, yeah, other than you'd rather win them than lose them, they have no direct correlation to your postseason. I guess they do in terms of maybe overall home field advantage, but it's so minuscule and the rules are so wonky, and who gets credit for being the home team? Okay, so we get to use the DH. Yay. Just do away with interleague play for a year and have the Astros play all divisional and American League games.
There's a part of me, Sean, and I know and I understand why purists or traditionalists or even just the average fan wouldn't like this, but there's a part of me, just because this is such a one-off year, where I wish for basketball and baseball you would go to an NCAA tournament style single elimination tournament if you had to, just because of the suspense of it, because of the anything can happen nature of it, because that might be what you're limited to. Maybe you've only got time for 20 or 30 total games, and why not at that point just kind of make it a single elimination? Baseball, I guess, if you went to three-game elimination, you know, or yeah, just something that's still really high stakes, I wouldn't mind that at all for this one year, and it would screw up all the record books and everything, but everything's all screwed up anyway to begin with.
Well, the only glitch in that plan, Seth, for the people that run baseball, is it's not enough content. You know what I mean? It's just not enough. Yeah. It's not enough to satisfy the TV partners.
Well, I mean, that's last case, if all of a sudden you're getting down to November or something, and you got to get something done, because you also have to worry about 2021. I mean, basketball is supposed to start up again in October for next season.
Right.
So, you know, at some point, I remember one year where there was a writer's strike in television, and I got super annoyed as a very avid television watcher. Like, all the seasons for sitcoms got screwed up for like 3 years afterwards. Cause like, instead of it, there was a huge writer's strike, and then so the next year, the season didn't start in September, and like all your new shows, like usually the one thing you could look forward to in the fall is like, oh, I got to go back to school, but I get all these new sitcoms coming out. It was all screwed up for a few years. More than anything, I'm getting to the point now where I just want 2021 to be untouched as much as possible. So play a 3-week season if you have to get back on schedule.
I'm going to tell you right now, if they go with the Seth Payne plan of doing a single elimination tournament, my desire for the Astros to be World Series champions, or be world champ, I guess they wouldn't be World Series champions necessarily because it's not a World Series, but to be declared world champions for 2020 gets jacked up quadruple or quintuple. Just for what the offseason would be to toy with the rest of baseball.
Oh, yes. Everybody would demand a second asterisk when there hasn't even been a first one declared. Oh, it'd be so much fun. That would be awesome. And Sean, if we're going to go to a single elimination tournament, let's remember this. The urologists. Think of all the revenue the urologists missed out on by not having an NCAA tournament. That's when all these guys would get their vasectomies to sit around. Where now, the medical, all these people that had to delay not just vasectomies, but any elective medical procedure. I've got a torn meniscus that I was waiting until the offseason to get. It's because during the football season, I can't walk. Now I'm going to have to get my meniscus during the football season. Let's remember the true victim in all this, which is Seth Payne's meniscus.
Seth Payne, of course, as always.
Yes, yes.
Seth Payne. All right. Some interesting answers for the baseball thing. We'll keep our fingers crossed that we get baseball sooner rather than later. You can listen on the radio.com app. You can listen radio.com rewind, smart speakers, Alexa, play Sports Radio 610. You can stream live sportsradio610.com.
Plus, Sean, just since we were both openly hoping that we have already had the coronavirus, so we have the antibodies. Right. Jackie Goss weighed in. He said that he and Amber took a cruise in early February, so he's definitely had it, and he probably infected your whole wedding party too. So your whole wedding party might be good. Yeah.
If you were at my wedding, if you were at my wedding, just know that you have probably had the coronavirus. You're welcome. That Jackie, and a honey chicken biscuit from Whataburger that you got on the way out.
Yeah, Jackie made it off that cruise just in time, I suppose. If he decided to wait a month later or something, he might still be floating around to sea waiting for a port to accept him.
Dude, I flew back. Amy and I flew back from California the day they closed Disneyland. I mean, the coronavirus was chasing us all over the world.
Jay Cutler and Kristen Cavallari are trapped at some resort with their kids and her hairdresser.
They're back.
They are back. Okay.
They're back. Yes. Yes. I Googled yesterday, Seth. They made it back. I mean, thank God. I mean, what it must be like to be trapped in the Bahamas. Poor kids.
I read some article about this South African couple that was having their honeymoon, and they really splurged on their honeymoon. They went to some nice island resort. So, but it wasn't like they're loaded or anything. They got trapped at this resort, and they've been there for like 4 weeks. Yeah, and they're the only people still there that they say they couldn't get out. Who knows? But the whole staff is still there. So they have like 7 waiters at every dinner. They're like, they have like personal concierges that stop by every couple hours. It's just, they're living the life.
Greatest vacation ever. All right. What exactly is this NFL draft going to look like for the league, for the Texans? We'll discuss it next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.